Hello, once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Berries are a sweet treat, and they're packed with nutrients that do a body good. This time of year is prime berry season. Strawberries ripen in June, blueberries in July, and raspberries in August. And there are so many things you can do with berries, from popping them in your mouth and enjoying them fresh to making delicious pies or preserving them to make jams and jellies. Want to know what to pick and what to make? Well, you're in luck. We have two experts in the studio with us. We'll make it very, very easy. Okay. All right. There you go. Dale Isla Riggs runs the Berry Patch in Steventown, New York, which is highly regarded for its superb strawberry harvest. Dale Isla is also the president of the New York State Berry Growers Association. Diane Witten is a food and nutrition educator. She has written the Farmer's Market recipe column in the Saratogian newspaper for 10 years and has just published a cookbook, Farmer's Market Favorite Recipes. She teaches courses in canning and preserving and has been on these airwaves before. If you have a question for our berry experts on this Food Friday, feel free to jam up the lines. And that's it for the puns, I swear to you. The number to call, 1-800-348-2551. Again, it's 1-800-348-2551. You can also post comments at the bottom of today's show page on the Vox Pop section of our website, wamc.org/voxpop. You can comment on Facebook, facebook.com/wamcradio. You can tweet your questions and comments at WAMC Vox Pop, or you can email us, voxpop@wamc.org. But we love your calls, 1-800-348-2551. Well, with all that said, welcome Dale Isla and Diane. Nice to have you here today.
It's great to be here.
Nice to be here. Thank you.
Oh, Dale Isla, you brought strawberries, and wow, quite a selection. Tell us what we have.
I did. It's peak strawberry season right now. Okay. So I brought six different varieties of strawberries that we're currently picking at the Berry Patch.
Okay.
And, you know, a lot of people say, I didn't know there were different varieties of strawberries, so
I brought some. That's pretty much what I said.
That's right.
Yeah.
You know, it's aren't all strawberries the ones that come in a little clear plastic container in the supermarket? Well, no. New York State is a great producer of strawberries. We have strawberry growers throughout the entire state. Mm. Almost every single county of the state has somebody growing strawberries. And so I brought a smattering of varieties. There's actually about 30 to 50 major strawberry varieties that people can grow.
Okay.
We grow 8 or 9 different ones on our farm. We've grown as many as 16, but we've kind of cut back. We're, number one, trying to simplify life a little bit.
Okay.
Because we grow a lot of other things. But we test a new variety each year, and some are more susceptible to disease. Some we just don't like the flavor of, and we only want to sell berries that we like the flavor of them. Some aren't produced anymore, so, you know, some varieties come and go. The ones that I brought in today, one of them is a new variety. Actually, there's just a very few berries of it, and it will be the first taste Ooh. I've had of this variety.
And what is that?
It's called AC Valley Sunset.
Okay.
It's a strawberry variety out of Nova Scotia.
All right.
Breeding program. A couple of the varieties were developed here in New York State. We have a strawberry breeder at the New York State Ag Experiment Station in Geneva. So Jewel is one of them. L'Amour is Courtney's newer variety.
All right.
Annapolis also came from Nova Scotia, as did Wendy.
Wendy.
And then San Andreas is a California variety, All not right. too surprisingly. I will have to step in here and... The puns aren't quite over. My husband wanted to make sure that I pointed out the fault with San Andreas.
And well, why don't we hire him to write as well?
That's
right. Jessica could use a hand, you know, if things get jammed up.
Right.
So anyway, we have strawberries to taste. Where should we begin?
We should begin with the Wendy's because those are the earliest variety.
Okay.
And you'll note, for anyone that might be watching, these berries are a little bit smaller in size.
They are.
And that is because the largest berries produced on the plant are always the first berry. So when you have a cluster of strawberries, the cluster of flowers comes out first, and you have what's called one king flower.
Okay.
And the king flower is what produces the biggest berry on the plant. It's the very first one open.
Okay.
Then you have two secondary berries, and sometimes called the queen berry. And those will be a little bit smaller. And then you have four third-level berries or tertiary berries, which are a little bit smaller yet. And then you have 8 fourth level berries or quaternary berries. So each level of flower that opens up, the fruit produced from those flowers are going to be a little bit smaller.
Oh, that's interesting.
Each time.
Now, you know, the myth that maybe it's not a myth. I've always heard from the time I was a little kid, the littler berries are more flavorful. Is that just a myth?
To me, it's not a myth. Some people may think it is, but physiologically in the plant, it makes sense that the smaller berries are sweeter because those are the later berries that are produced. And so the plant has had a longer period of time to grow. There's more leaves. The leaves are what produces the sugar, the food for the berries. So you've got more sugar being produced by the plant, which is then going into those smaller berries.
Okay, so we are trying here Wendy?
Wendy.
All right, let's try yep. a taste of Wendy here.
Yep.
Mmm. What was that?
Like candy.
It is like candy. Jessica, our producer, said it's like candy. And it is. It's so sweet. Delicious.
Yeah. Now, the Wendy's, they're a very sweet berry. They are very early. They are the smaller ones right now. Unfortunately, I probably won't be growing Wendy a whole lot longer because it has a problem with leaf spots on the leaves. It has a disease problem. So
is that
again,
something that can be bred out in the future?
Yes. And one of the things that the breeder in Geneva works very hard on is breeding disease-resistant strawberries. So when he evaluates different strawberry lines that he's developing, he spreads them throughout the state and gets grower feedback. We actually have one of his new selections on our farm that we just planted a couple weeks ago. And that's exactly the type of feedback that he looks for.
Mm.
Does it have a lot of leaf disease? Does it seem to die early? Are there root disease problems? And all the breeders are trying to make it so that the less crop protection materials that are needed, the better. So that the leaves are nice and clean, no disease, no root diseases. The planting lasts a long time. You get big, healthy plants, which means you have big, healthy, sweet-tasting berries.
Now, when you'd mentioned at the start of the show, there were some 60 varieties of strawberries, right? Am I wrong about that?
Yeah, yeah.
So when someone goes into the grocery store and gets, as you say, a package covered in plastic, what's the most common one that people get? That doesn't really say these are San Andreas or Valley
right.
Sunset. What's the most common that people buy?
Well, remember that most of those are coming from California or Florida.
Mm-hmm.
And the varieties that are grown in different parts of the country tend to be different than what we grow in the Northeast because they have different environmental conditions. That said, most likely they're a variety called either Chandler or Camarosa. They were developed in California for California conditions, which means no rain, fewer disease issues, very, very productive. Often they produce for a longer period of time. But in California, they actually follow the harvest kind of follows the state. So climatically. So in the winter, you're getting ones from Southern California and inland where it's hotter. And then they move up the coast and into cooler areas during the summer.
Right.
And Florida berries usually start to come in around February or so, February through April.
The number to call here is 1-800-348-2551. Dale Isla Riggs joins us from the Berry Patch in Steventown, New York, and Diane Witten, who hasn't said anything. Hello, Diane.
Yeah, if I can jump in right here, yeah. I'd like to say that the berries that are grown in Florida and California, they're also varieties that are chosen because they ship well,
yeah.
and the berries will last a long time. So they're not necessarily chosen for the best flavor.
Exactly.
So shelf life is key. Do they treat them? I mean, these are obviously fresh and delicious and unadorned, but when you buy something prepackaged in the grocery store, will it be treated in any way for longevity's sake?
That's doubtful. I will say that in California, they because of the different climate and disease and insect and disease issues, they probably are on a much heavier spray program than what New York growers are. New York growers don't tend to spray their berries very much. Some don't spray at all. In a wet year, that's kind of hard to get away with because
yeah.
you want a red berry. You don't want a gray, fuzzy berry from
probably
gray mold.
In terms of keeping them fresh during storage, it's a lot of it is temperature and humidity. That's important.
Yeah.
That it's maintained at a certain temperature when it's being shipped across the country by rail or something.
Yeah. And the other thing is when they pick them in California, you know, you'll often see them with white tips. And
yeah.
so they aren't fully red. They're doing that because they last longer in shipping. But because of that, they don't have nearly as much flavor.
Interesting.
And one of the things that we're always educating people about at our farm when they come and do pick your own berries is pick a fully red berry. Don't pick it when it has a white tip, because if it's not fully ripe, which it's not, if it has a white tip, then it hasn't developed its full sweetness, hasn't developed its full sugar. And it may turn red after you pick it, but the sugar level does not get any higher.
Makes sense. And so this would be one of your berry picking tips that you mentioned that you had.
Exactly.
All right. Now we have to take a break, but let's try one more before the break. We tried Wendy. What else would we try?
Annapolis.
Annapolis. Okay. Ah, Jessica Blaustein Marshall. Nice to have you back. She was not here last week.
Nice to be back.
All right. What do we got? We got Annapolis here. Let's try it.
Yep, and you can see that these are a little bit bigger. They start a little bit later in the season.
Amazing.
Really taste the difference.
Yeah, you can taste the difference. All right, I tell you what, Zach, we're eating strawberries. It's not compelling radio, I know. And let's take a break. 1-800-348-2551 is the number. 1-800-348-2551, and then I promise you, your calls. Jim in Bearsville, you're first. You hang in there.
Support for WAMC comes from Cafe Capriccio, offering dining and catering with Tuscan cuisine in Albany, New York, and Neapolitan cuisine in Saratoga Springs. CafeCapriccio.com for reservations. Orange County Tourism and the scenic Hudson Valley, featuring spring gardens, wineries, boat cruises, country inns, and a full schedule of upcoming events. OrangeCountyTourism.org. Schenectady Green Market, a community marketplace providing fresh local produce and artisan goods every Sunday from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. around City Hall, SchenectadyGreenMarket.org. And Bel Air Music Festival, High Mount, New York, presenting The Music of Queen, a rock musical, Saturday, July 5th, and Buddy Guy, July 12th, BelleAyreMusic.org for tickets.
One 800-348-2551 is our number. It's Vox Pop. It is a Food Friday. Dale Isla Riggs is here and Diane Witten. We're talking about berries and how to pick them and how to eat them and how to preserve them. And Diane, you've been on the show before and you're kind of an expert in preserving foods of all kinds.
Well, I really don't consider myself an expert,
well,
but I do,
do
teach food preservation. And I do classes every year on making jams and jellies. And so
Brought jams.
And I did bring some jams for you to taste. I actually brought two that I have made myself, and then one that was made by a someone who sells retail at local farmers markets.
All right. Well, we'll talk about that, and let's talk about the process, and if you want to sell your own, how to do that. We'll get into that as the show wears on. But I promised Jim in Bearsville and some others that we'd get to the phones. And Jim, you're first. Hi. Thanks for waiting.
Hi. Yep. Happy to wait. It's always a pleasure.
You're on. Go ahead.
My question is, I'm in Bearsville in the Catskills. I'm about 1,800 feet up on the side of a mountain. This winter, I have both blackberries, which are wild, that I domesticate in the sense that I gather them together into an area and I prune them and take care of them, and raspberries, which are hybrids that I get from pine tree garden seeds in Maine. And this past winter, the blackberry patches that I have, which are two different patches, let's say, both were killed. And the raspberries, which sometimes do well and sometimes don't do well, are doing better than they ever have. Can you explain this?
Sure.
They're contiguous with one another in terms of the patches are right next to one another.
Sure,
Same
Jim.
Same soil, et cetera.
Yeah. You're not alone is the first thing I'm going to say is blackberries throughout the Northeast had a hard time this year. And that is because it was just such a severe winter. We had colder temperatures than what we've had for quite a while. I know at my place in Steventown, you know, I had 20 below several mornings, 15 below several mornings. And blackberries are more tender. So once we started getting below about 10 below zero, 5 below zero, most blackberry cultivars that are grown in the Northeast really don't like to have it go below 10 below zero. And I'm on a weekly call of berry experts from throughout the Northeast, and everybody from Maine through Pennsylvania has been reporting a lot of damage on a lot of cane dieback on blackberries this year, and it's right. purely due to the cold winter.
Okay.
Is it got anything? Some people have said to me that it's the cold and then the thawing and then the refreezing. Is that right, or is it just the cold per se?
In the case of blackberries for this year, it's most likely just the plain cold during the winter, but certainly there is a lot of damage that can occur in the spring when we have those alternating temperatures.
Yeah.
So that tends to be more of a problem for raspberries than it does blackberries, but that can also be an issue. We often get more winter injury in the caneberries in March than we do in January.
Jim, thank you.
And why do you think the raspberries are doing so well?
Raspberries everywhere are doing well. It didn't get as cold, and it was a long fall and lots of moisture last year, so the plants are healthy and raring to go.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Jim. And you said before the show that the sweet cherries are in trouble this year as well.
Yeah, the sweet cherry crop is smaller. I won't say they're in trouble, but sweet cherries are not going to be as plentiful this year because the flower buds died during the winter.
So 10 below is another cutoff?
10 below for the sweet cherries, yeah.
Okay, and that's why preserving is so darn important. If you don't have blackberries this year, maybe you preserved some. And Diane, what is the real trick? Is it you have to put pectin in to make that work when you preserve?
Good question. It depends on the fruit, actually. And usually we do use pectin because when you're making a jam or jelly with pectin, it gels easier. Mm-hmm. It gels, you know, within a certain amount of time. But some fruits are higher in pectin so that you don't even need to add it to the fruit. For instance, currants. I have a recipe for a blackberry currant jam that requires no added pectin because currants are very high in pectin themselves.
So how would you make that?
Well, you just cook the blackberries and the currants together, and then they kind of gel up after a amount of time after you're heating them on the stove.
That's it.
Yeah, it's pretty easy.
Put them in a dark place, seal them up, and you're good to go.
Well, you put them in the jar. You know, that's the whole canning process.
Yeah.
The whole canning process follows cooking them. You know, you put them in the jar, and then we recommend processing them in a boiling water bath, which means you submerse the whole jar in boiling water for about 5 to 10 minutes.
And what's to be gained from that?
Well, that's what actually creates the vacuum seal. And boil it in the water, all of the air that's in the jar is sucked out and creating a seal.
Yeah.
So you know how the top of the lid is indented?
Yeah.
That's because there's a vacuum seal. And one of the things that destroys fruit is air. Air itself, you know, breaks down the quality of the fruit. So when you process it in the boiling water bath, creates that vacuum seal, so there's no air there to break down the integrity of the fruit so that it lasts longer. That's the preserving process.
We're talking to Diane Witten and Dale Isla Riggs, and back to the phones we go at 800-348-2551. Jay in Worthington, Mass. You're on. Hello? Jay, you're on the radio. Oh, this is Matthew. I'm sorry, wrong button. Matthew, are you there?
Actually, this is his mom, Erica.
Wow, it's getting confusing.
we're in Latham, and we are actually on our way to go pick berries right this moment.
I'll be darned.
Thanks to an early dismissal.
Okay.
And Matt's here, and he has a question.
All right.
I'm Matt, and I'm 8, so I'd like to know why a strawberry is called a strawberry.
Why a strawberry is called a strawberry.
That is an excellent question, Matt. A strawberry is called a strawberry. Originally, it was called a strewberry because the fruit are kind of strewn throughout the plant. And so you find them in different spots under the leaves. And so they were originally called strewberries because of that. But then farmers used to bring them to market on bales of straw. So they would pick them into baskets or some type of container, bring them to the market on bales of straw, and so then the name was switched to strawberry. They're also called strawberries because during the winter, we actually cover the plants with straw to protect them from the cold, and then in the spring, we take the straw off, put it between the aisles of the plants to keep the weeds down and have a nice clean bed so that you have nice, clean, non-dirty strawberries to pick when you're out in the field.
Sounds like you may have answered that question in the past.
Actually, no.
Really?
No,
oh, that was very good off the cuff. That was excellent.
I've also heard that the Indians used to call them heartberries. And I like that because, you know, they're red and they are in the shape of a heart. Plus, they're good for your heart.
Yep.
Let's go to Jay in Worthington. Jay, you're on.
Hi. I'm a hobby farmer in Massachusetts, and I raise raspberries, blueberries, and cattle primarily. I have one question and then something that I want to tell you about involving farming and taxation between New York State and Massachusetts. Right. My first question is, I have cultivated high bush blueberries, and though I treat them very well, they're not very sweet. How can I improve on their sweetness?
Okay, that's a great question that I've heard several times before. And one of the things that people don't know about blueberries is even though a blueberry turns blue, it doesn't mean it's fully ripe. So when that blueberry turns totally blue, you need to wait about 7 days after it has turned fully blue before you pick it for it to develop more sugar content. And one of the things that we teach our crew when they're out picking in the field is that what we tell them to look for is the little stem that attaches the blueberry to the fruit cluster. In most cases, that will actually start to turn red when the fruit is really fully sweet. So it's probably a matter of letting them hang on the bush for a longer period of time. It may be, you know, it may be more complicated than that nutritionally for the plant, but I would let them hang on the plant longer and just see if you can get that sugar content to increase some.
Okay.
Okay. We have in Massachusetts a program called Chapter 61 that reduces agricultural taxes by 90%. You mentioned that you farm in New York State. New York State doesn't have this program, and my understanding is that New York State agricultural taxes are way higher than the national average. So talk to your legislators. If they want people to, you know, move to the country and farm, they're going to have to make an effort to reduce taxes, and they should look at Massachusetts' example and follow it because it's a wonderful program.
All right, Jay, thank you. Any comments, Dale Island?
No, I will look into that.
Okay, let's go to, and by the way, the number to call is 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. We talk berries and picking them and preserving them with Dale Isla Riggs and Diane Witten. Greg in Rotterdam Junction, you're on. Hello, Greg, are you there?
Yes, hi, how you doing?
Good.
Good. I have a question. I live in an area where it's very wet, heavy soils at the base of a hill, which I own the hillside, too, and there are wild blackberries which grow on the hill. I've tried raspberries down at the bottom where the soils aren't well-drained. Raspberries have not done anything, but I have had a little bit of blueberry success. But my question is twofold. How do I clear the land in some because it's just light, like tag alders and like that. I don't want to disturb the land with a bulldozer, but is there some sort of weed killer you recommend? And the other is the deer tick population is very heavy around here. And do you encounter them in your picking? And how do you work around that type of obstacle?
Good questions.
With the deer ticks?
Okay.
Yeah, as far as clearing the land, you know, everyone has their own approach that they want to take. And you said it's tag alders? Is that what you called them?
Yeah. Yeah, it's a low brush and small undergrowth and shrubs.
Yeah, my farm has been farmed. The farmland has been cultivated for lots and lots of years, so I can't say I really have any experience with clearing land. But I would just get out there with a chainsaw and, somebody that might do like house lot clearing that could take out stumps for you. It sounds to me like you might want to consider just doing raised beds instead, though. The bottom of a hill, you're going to be getting a lot of excess moisture, and most plants, especially raspberries, will not like that excess moisture. So you might want to think about building some raised beds, and that might be a little bit easier way to do it. And
okay.
And there are commercial growers that use raised beds for their berry plants as well.
Okay.
As far as the deer tick population goes, we have not had a problem in our fields themselves. Deer ticks come on deer and white-footed mice. And in the fields, we keep them cultivated and mowed enough that that we've not had an issue with that. The deer tend to stay more near the edges of the woods and near our pond and places like that. We put on our protective DEET when we go out near the edge of the woods, yeah. But in the plantings themselves, we've not had an issue.
Greg, thank you very much. We appreciate the call.
Okay, thank you.
Bye now. 1-800-348-2551 is the telephone number. Susanna in Albany. Susanna, you're on.
Hi.
Hi.
I just wanted to comment from an earlier listener that my blackberries actually are beautiful this year. And what happened 2 years ago is that they really took over part of our garden, and I went a little nuts one day and cut everything down, much to the chagrin of my whole family, and we had no blackberries last year, and this year they're just beautiful. They're huge, and no one will let me cut them down. So did that have something to do with it, you think?
It's great to hear that they're beautiful. I don't think the cutting them down had a lot to do with it as far as the winter damage goes. I think that you probably have a very winter-hardy variety, or it's in a more protected location.
So a sheltered location?
Yeah.
Is that possible, Susanna?
It's just on the edge of my garden in my backyard. They're wild. You know, they were growing wild.
Okay, so if they're wild blackberries, those are more hardy. You know, the people that are having problems with their blackberries dying out, they're using the cultivated varieties, which are more sensitive to the cold.
Okay.
Oh, great. Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.
By the way, while that call was on, I just tried the Lemoore strawberry. Might be my favorite one so far.
Yeah.
Meaty, really nice and perhaps not as sweet, but really tasty.
Yeah, the Lemoore is my favorite, both flavor-wise as well as production-wise as a grower.
Easy to do?
Not so much easier to do, but it tends to have fewer issues with leaf diseases and soil diseases, and it's turned out to be a real workhorse variety.
Really
comes
nice.
Through in any conditions.
We're joined by Dale Eiler Riggs of Berry Patch and the Berry Patch in Steventown, New York, and Diane Witten, who is a food and nutrition educator and has brought some amazing preserves. I assume they're amazing. We will try them after the next break in just a moment or two. So prepare yourself, Diane, because we are going to do a taste test. But right now, let's go back to the phones. Barbara in Sharon, Connecticut. Barbara.
Hi.
Hi.
Oh, I can sort of not hear you.
Hello. Can you hear me now?
Yes, I can.
Okay, you're on.
Hi. My question is, I have several red currant bushes. Something is eating the leaves, not disturbing the fruit, but eating the leaves, and I cannot see it. I can't find anything. So it's stripping the bush of the leaves.
Okay.
And I wanted to know what it might be and how I can get rid of it.
Well, usually when that's the case, it's something that's going on at night.
Yes.
So what I suggest is get out there with a flashlight around 9, 10 o'clock at night when it gets dark and see what might be crawling around on there. There is a very high population of an insect this year called currant sawfly.
Okay.
And I don't know the life cycle of it, but it has been defoliating currant bushes throughout the Northeast. So get out there at night, see if you can find something, get a sample of it, and then get it to your local cooperative extension office and they can get it ID'd for you.
Oh, okay. That sounds great. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And what would you do about it if you have identified it?
Once they know what it is, then they can decide, you know, is there something that people might want to just, you know, maybe it's just going to run its course and that it's going to soon be in the soil, pupating, turning into an adult, and what damage has happened. Somebody could decide if they want to take a stronger action and use some sort of organic or non-organic control for it. But you can't really do anything till you know just what's causing the problem.
So for the average person listening right now who just maybe does this casually and for fun and for delicious berries, that's one thing, and it's an annoyance. But for you, it's a business, so how do you handle it?
Yeah, we luckily have not had a lot of issues with insects. I have a lot of background in agriculture and especially in strawberries, and I actually get out in my fields try to do it on a weekly basis. The biggest insect problem with strawberries actually happens during blossom time with an insect called tarnished plant bug that will eat the flowers and the developing seeds, actually. and that causes a deformed berry. So I go out and I tap the blossoms, see if there's any insects out there. And if there's not, then I don't have to worry about it. And this was a fantastic year. I went out 5 weeks in a row, and in all the tapping of flower clusters that I did, I probably looked at 600, 700 flower clusters over time. And the insect just was not out there in our fields this
year. Severe winter, maybe?
That might be part of it. Also, there may be a little bit with cool springs. The insect is kind of behind the plant development. But more likely, several years ago, USDA started releasing a beneficial insect, a natural predator. And we haven't had much problem with tarnished plant bug the last several years. So I'm thinking maybe these predator bugs have established and are naturally controlling the tarnished plant bug population.
That's great, until we find out that the controlling bug is doing something bad as well.
Yeah,
isn't that a danger?
That can be, but you know, they screen really, really hard on these types of things.
All right, let's take a break. 1-800-348-2551. It's Food Friday. We talk berries, and in a moment, we'll try some preserves.
Support for WAMC comes from GG Trattoria Rhinebeck, Hudson Valley Mediterranean since 2001, expanding their farm-to-table catering with their easy, entertaining seasonal menus online for small impromptu or large gatherings, gghudsonvalley.com. Marbletown True Value Hardware, Stone Ridge, New York, a locally owned independent source offering air conditioners, fans, pool accessories, and more, marbletownhardware.com, True Value, Start Right, Start Here. The Bee's Knees Cafe, Preston Hollow, New York, serving weekend lunch and Sunday brunch, monthly five-course farmed and foraged dinners, and grass-fed cooking classes, heather-ridge-farm.com. And Capital Repertory Theater, presenting Summer at the Rep, a month-long drama program for ages 10 to 13. Students will be on stage in a Greek myth of their own making, July 7th through August 3rd, capitalrep.org.
Vox Pop on WAMC, a Food Friday, a lovely way to wrap up the week of Vox Pop. We're joined by Dale Isla Riggs of the Berry Patch in Steventown, New York, and Diane Witten, a food and nutrition educator, and we've been talking about berries and strawberries in particular, and also we will taste some preserves. And Diane Witten, what have we here?
Oh, you have a sample of strawberry rhubarb jam. And this, I have to give a call out to Beth's Farm Kitchen, which she sells her jams down in New York City and at the Berry Patch all over the place.
Oh, it's good. You had me at rhubarb. Oh, it's
delicious. A great combination because the rhubarb is tart and the strawberries are sweet. And yeah, everybody loves the strawberry rhubarb combination.
I need some toast. That's what I need. Can we get the toaster in here?
I can get you some
this
toast.
Is great. Okay.
And, you know, that's made with your traditional pectin.
Okay.
And then the next one I'm going to give to you is one that I had made. It's a low sugar jam because a lot of people with it, you know, if they have diabetes
sure.
or something, or they just don't like to eat a lot of sugar, they want to make a jam that's a little lower in sugar. And if you do that, you have to have a special pectin. You have
now, why?
Because pectin is part of the gelling process. So if you're and sugar is part of the gelling process too.
All right.
You need sugar, an acid, and pectin in order to form the gel. So if you've got less sugar, it just requires a different kind of pectin in order to be able to gel without the same amount of, without the sugar.
So to be clear, you have not added artificial sweetener to this.
No, there's no artificial sweetener.
It is delicious, and you really taste the strawberries in this. It's that's good. I mean.
Right, because you're not masking it with all of the sugar.
Fantastic. Right, so, well done.
So, yeah, that's something to keep in mind. And all of these pectins that I'm talking about are all available at, you know, Walmart, Target, Tractor Supply, Agway, your grocery store. You just have to make sure you get the right pectin.
Is it easy to do this?
It's easy.
Where can you learn how to do it?
It's a little time consuming, but it's easy. Well, I've got a Master Food Preserver class next week, actually, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
I have a room for a few more people. It's $350. And then I also do food preservation classes during the summer.
Yeah.
I mean, so people can check my website, ccesaratoga.org. I know Albany County Cooperative Extension also offers food preservation classes, and those classes I'm just charging $25 for. And I'm doing one on jams and jellies. Specifically, I'll do another one on pressure canning, like we'll be pressure canning green beans, for instance. Same thing you can do with meats. You can pressure can meats even. And then later, the beginning of September, I'm going to do one during tomato season. I'll be doing one on salsa.
Ah, well, all right. And you didn't you bring salsa last time?
Did I bring
salsa? Somebody brought salsa. My memory's awful. All right,
I'll bring it next time.
All right, let's go to the phones. Jade and Holly. Jade, you're on.
Hi there. Can you hear me?
Sure.
Great. I'm salivating here listening to your program.
No, I'm going to have a Jewel strawberry right now while you talk.
I have a very silly little innocent joke I wanted to share and thought it might be appropriate for
okay.
this program.
Great.
And Ray, maybe you can answer it. What did one strawberry say to the other strawberry?
What did one strawberry say to the other strawberry? Anybody have this one? No.
Well, what one strawberry said to the other strawberry is, if you weren't so fresh, we wouldn't be in this jam.
Hey!
So there you go. That's your silly joke for the day.
Good one. Thank you.
I'm going to use that during my preserving courses.
Fair enough. You get your material here. Christine in Mount Tremper. Christine, you're on.
Hi. I have a species of strawberry called an alpine berry. And they're really tiny and sweet and delicious. But they grow a lot of leaves. And I'm wondering if it's because it's not in the sunniest of places. And is there anything I could do to make a better crop, a more prolific crop?
Christine, is it only this year that it has mostly leaves, or is it all the time?
No, it's every year. And I don't know if it's because it's not in the sunniest of places, and it might be striving for more light.
That's a good start. You know, when people ask me, when they buy plants from us, tomato plants or whatever, they say sun or shade. And my standard response is the more sun it gets, the more flowers and therefore fruit you're going to get.
Okay.
So if it's in a pretty shady spot, I would try transplanting some to a nice sunny spot.
And another thing is sometimes the berries will go from not ripe to mushy.
Ah.
Yeah, that might be an environmental issue. Just, you know, if it's really hot, they ripen really fast. And the alpine strawberry isn't known for being a real firm berry to begin with. That's kind of why the breeders started coming up with domesticated strawberries, because the wild ones do have some things that horticulturally aren't the best attributes.
All right. Very good information. Thank you.
Thanks, Christine. All right, Diane Witten, what have we here?
What you have there is what's called my blueberry freezer jam.
Okay.
And this is really easy to make. And instead of, it's a different preservation method because you're actually preserving it in the freezer as opposed to, you know, doing it in the boiling water bath and causing that whole, you know, vacuum seal in the jar. You can make very small batches of this easily. You just mix pectin with some sugar, put in your berries, and mash them all together.
It tastes delicious. Now, how long will it keep?
Well, it'll keep in the freezer for forever. You know, the thing is, once you take it out of the freezer, you want to keep it in the refrigerator, and it'll keep for a while. But it really retains the true berry flavor.
And the texture to some extent.
Yeah.
It's nice.
Right, because once you cook berries, they kind of break down. The flavor breaks down a little. The texture breaks down a little. So I love the freezer jam.
I think it's great.
And it's a great activity to do with kids. I actually do it as a demonstration at the Saratoga County Fair every year. And the kids love just mashing the berries. And then you just have to put it in the jars and stick it in your freezer.
Great. Let's go.
And all of these jam recipes, I mean, some of them you can get from the pectin boxes themselves. And this does require a different type of pectin, too. It's a liquid pectin.
Okay.
So when you're buying the pectin, just look for freezer. It'll either say instant or freezer jam. And then more recipes can be found on the National Center for Home Food Preservation, which is www.homefoodpreservation.com. Or just Google National Center for Home Food Preservation.
Right. There can't be too many of them.
No. And so lots of recipes and resources there.
All right. Let's go back to the phones and Alice in Cragsmore. Alice, you're on.
Hi. Thanks for hosting this nice program.
Thank you.
I wondered if anyone had experimented with making preserves from the berry of the barberry bush. We found an old recipe which likened it to preserves from currant jam, but it said you had to start with a peck of those little tiny green and red berries from the pricker bushes. And I can't quite see doing that, but I wondered if anybody else had done that.
How much is a peck?
A peck?
Trying to visualize that.
Yeah, it's there's a couple of bushels, pecks, right? And a half bushel.
Oh, okay.
Okay. I've never done that. I've never done a recipe with blueberry or with babe. What would you call them?
Barberries.
Again, I would check out the National Center for Home Food Preservation because they do have a lot of jam recipes on there, and some of them are older jam recipes.
Okay.
National Center for Home Food. Okay.
Home Food Preservation.
Thanks, Alice. Yeah. Appreciate the call.
Thank you all.
Bye. 1-800-348-2551. All right, panel. Here we got one from email. Jessica just handed it off. Here we go. This is from Nancy. Please give us some suggestions for storing strawberries when you get home from picking them and plan to store them for a very short time. P.S. I knew Dale before she spent a semester in, it says Amaria?
Armenia.
Oh, Armenia. Well, that's not, all right. We'll have to correct Nancy's spelling on that. All right. Well, anyway, the question is, how do you store them for a very short time?
Okay. So what I always tell people at our farm is, when you pick the berries, if you're going to use them that evening, just keep them in the coolest part of your house. That might be a basement. It might be on your kitchen counter. If you aren't planning to use the strawberries till the next day, you should always refrigerate them. And that goes for any type of berry, strawberry, yeah, raspberry, blueberry. Just when you get home, get them in your fridge. Berries have a very high, what we call, respiration rate, and so they really don't store at room temperature very well. So you should make sure that you get them put in the fridge right away.
And I should just say that I was just brought toast. So
toast. Do you want some jam with your toast?
Ask and you shall receive. 1-800, thank you, Nancy, for emailing us. 1-800-348-2551. Dawn in Vermont. Dawn, you're on.
Yeah, hi. I have lots and lots of wild strawberries that grow all over the place. And, you know, they came from the wild, and they came transplanted with something else I moved, you know? And they have actually become a tremendous nuisance. They're everywhere. And I wondered if I sprinkled something they don't like lime on the soil, maybe that would discourage them and keep them at bay?
That's a good possibility. Strawberries, wild strawberries especially, tend to like more acid soil.
Yep.
Domestic strawberries, you know, will grow well in more acid soil than vegetable crops would.
Right. Yeah.
So that would be a good thought. I would contact your county cooperative extension office and ask them if they have any specific ideas. But I think getting the pH level up to more like 6.8 to 7 is a good start.
Okay.
For you.
Right, okay. Because pulling them out, in a way, it doesn't work. I mean, somehow you never get the entire root. And like, we pulled out what we thought were all of them out of some certain garden paths, you know, last summer. And they're back. Like, how can that be?
Are they tasty?
They're very tasty. But, you know, you have to get down on your hands and knees. And you don't get much for having been on your hands and knees for a really, you know.
Okay, yeah.
I mean, it's, you know, we're so used to those big fat things that it takes patience to want to really love these.
Well, thank you, Dawn. I appreciate it. Good luck with that. Now, Diane, you've handed me something that looks very much like the fruit roll-ups my kids eat.
Right. We call it fruit leather, but fruit roll-up sounds nicer, actually, and people know what you're talking about when you say that, but that's a brand name.
So, strawberry. Delicious.
This is a strawberry fruit leather, and I just made this last night. I had some fresh strawberries. I sliced them, put them in a blender, blended up, pureed them, and then just poured them on a special tray. Well, you know, I have some non-stick material.
Okay.
Kind of like a cookie
sheet.
Can you
do it with wax paper? Or?
I don't know if you'd want to use wax paper in the oven. Parchment paper.
Oh, okay. Not in the
better.
Oven. All right.
Or I did mine in a dehydrator. You can do it in your own oven at a very low temperature, like 175 to 200 degrees. I have a dehydrator that has a fan in it, so it took about 3 hours to make this fruit leather.
Very nice.
And again, dehydrating is another form of food preservation.
And how long will that take?
Small berries can be dried whole. Larger berries like strawberries, if you wanted, you could probably slice them and dry them sliced.
And how long would this keep at room temperature?
At room temperature, this will keep pretty much forever. I mean, I have some fruit leather that I probably should have eaten a while ago, but it's in the back of my pantry.
You could have brought it as an experiment if we didn't die before the show was over.
And it tastes, and yeah, the flavor starts to deteriorate over time.
Yeah.
With all home food preserve foods, we tell people to try to eat it within a year, you know, which makes sense because, you know, new season comes. And
sure.
So what you have left over, you can discard and or use up and make up your new batch of whether it's preserves or fruit leather. And the other real easy way of preserving berries is, of course, just freezing them.
And that's
berries
okay.
lend themselves very well to freezing. You can just put them on a tray and stick them in the freezer, just in a single layer on a tray. And once they're frozen, put them in a bag, in a freezer bag. Try to, you know, sometimes you can put a straw in the freezer bag and suck out the air like you're a human, vacuum
yeah,
sealer.
Sure. All right.
But air, again, is something that deteriorates the quality. So.
All right. Let's go to Larry in Massachusetts. Larry, where are you in Massachusetts?
Hello.
Where are you calling from? Where are you calling?
Massachusetts.
Fair enough. All right. You're on.
Yeah. I'm calling in response to the call where the gentleman mentioned reduced taxation for agricultural land in Massachusetts.
Mm-hmm.
I was an assessor for 25 years, so I thought I might add a little bit to that. This taxation that he was talking about is covered by Chapter 61 of Massachusetts General Laws. It's divided into three sections. Chapter 61 itself covers forest land.
Mm-hmm.
61A covers agricultural land.
I see.
And 61B covers recreational and conservation land. I should say or conservation land.
Okay.
And for those who qualify under these chapters or the sections of Chapter 61, if you qualify, it results in a reduction of the valuation of the land.
Okay.
Which consequently reduces the taxes because the taxes are based on the tax rate times the valuation.
All right. Fair enough. Well, Larry, thank you. I'm going to get to a couple of more calls about berries and whatnot. But, you know, our Vox Pop listeners are so smart that even a show about berries can become a political discussion. We have very smart listeners. Let's go to Celeste in Pennsylvania. Celeste, you're on.
Hello?
Hello.
Hi. I have a question. I have some raspberry bushes.
Okay.
And they're about 2 or 3 years old. They're small. And the original branches are like a red color, and this year they're really taken off. But the new growth is like thick and green, and it's really big. It's like taken off really fast, and now I'm starting to feel suspicious. Could it be like an imitator weed or something?
Ah, I mean,
each bush is growing these big shoots and everything. So my original bush, like the one with the red branches, they have like tiny little sickly little berries on them. So I was just wondering, like, is there such a thing as like imitator weeds that might really look like the raspberry and just take off? I mean, it's the same exact kind of stalk, like it's, you know, thistly and stuff, but they're not red like the original, you know, parent bush.
Yeah, this year's growth, the new growth on the raspberry cane, will be green because it's rapidly growing. It's part of the standard plant tissue being green. I would say just be really happy that they're growing so well.
Oh, good.
Okay.
You know, because the taller the plant you get, the more fruit you're going to get, the more side branches you'll get. So those plants just sound like they're really happy this year.
Well, that's good news. Thanks, Celeste.
Thanks.
Bye now. Let's go quickly to Teresa. Teresa, I'm sorry, you have about 30 seconds. Teresa?
Yes, I have a question on canning. I can in jars, and usually I use them twice. And I just pack the jam hot and then let it cool off. And as it cools off, it seals it. Is there anything wrong with that?
Okay, very quickly.
Well, that's not the recommended method. Like I said before, earlier, we recommend processing in a boiling water bath. And the reason for that is because you are more assured of getting a good seal.
Yeah.
When you just do, what you're describing is kind of an old-time method, and the seal is more likely that the seal will fail.
Okay.
And if you go through all the work of making a jam, you want to make sure it lasts.
Terrific. Well, this has been so much fun and so tasty. And just a reminder, you can find a lot of these recipes we talked about and a lot of the information right at our website, wamc.org/VoxPop or Food Friday, if you want to search that. Support comes from Hudson Valley Fresh Dairy, a partnership of 9 Hudson Valley dairy farms, providing fresh local milk, cream, sour cream, and yogurt to our neighbors, hudsonvalleyfresh.com. Curtis Lumber, proudly serving their communities for over 100 years, providing lumber, building materials, doors, windows, paint, and more for 21 locations in New York and northern Vermont, curtislumber.com. And Pangea, North Bennington, Vermont, contemporary American cuisine prepared with local sustainable ingredients featuring international beer and wines, vermontfinedining.com and Facebook. Thanks to Dale Isler Riggs of The Berry Patch. It's theberrypatch.net. And thanks also to Diane Witten. Thanks to you for listening. Thanks to Zach Malloy at the controls. Colleen O'Connell answered the calls. Our producer, Jessica Blaustein-Marshall. I'm Ray Graff. We're out of time. Goodbye.